Blog Talk Radio.
You're tuned to
Disorderly Conduct
with your host,
Vincent the Bay.
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 Hi there, honey. I'm number one.
Hi there, fella. I'd like to see you after the show.
2-2-2. Check, check, check. Testing. Check, check, check. 2-2-2-2. Motherfucking Jaya, everybody. Hey, hey, hey. It's Vince in the motherfucking Bay. Back with you for yet another edition of Disorderly Conduct. It's Sunday, September 15th, 2013. Welcome to the program. I am Vince, and I will be your audio erotic host for the next 2 hours. And I'm very, very excited to have a star-studded lineup for tonight's program. I am expecting to hear from several people, including the likes of Kilgore and Hatesec, who are both contributors to Chronicle.su. They are writers for the Internet Chronicle, your one-stop shop for everything news on the internet. I am a former contributor to Chronicle.su. I haven't contributed anything in a couple of years, so I've been meaning to submit something, so hopefully I can come up with something soon, because I really love their work, and it's always a pleasure to have them join the festivities here. Also, I'm expecting to be joined by my old friend, Anon Sicko. I'm sorry, my bad. Just Sicko. In fact, I'll just call him Sicko. That's right, Sicko's going to join me. It's been a long time since I've had Sidekicko here. Also planned to join me tonight is Caesar, who goes by the Martyr _ on Twitter. He is a drunk, belligerent troll. So I'm hoping he's going to lend some comic relief to the proceedings. And also, I'm very, very happy to have back on the show tonight Lee Stranahan. Lee Stranahan, a contributor over at Breitbart.com. Lee is always working on something. And I believe his latest effort is he is trying to raise funds to raise funds for travel expenses to go to the Middle East. I believe he's going to interview Syrian refugees who were camped out on the border of Syria. I don't know which border, because Syria borders quite a few countries. But that sounds fascinating to me. If I had money to throw around, I would help Lee out, because I think that's that could be an interesting and unique story. Certainly one that people in the mainstream media just gloss over. You hear about the millions of refugees and Syrian refugees as just like an afterthought in all the discussions in the media. It's really pathetic. So yeah, I'm going to have those guys on. We're going to chop it up about whatever. I did put some topics in my show description, but we don't have to adhere to those. Some of it is stuff left over from Friday that I didn't get to. As you know, Putin continues to school Obama on the geopolitical stage. Also, this week, the Senate have resurrected a media shield law that's getting a lot of blowback from independent media. What else is going on? I talked about, well, hopefully when Lee calls in, we'll talk about the Syrian refugee situation. Also, we can touch on Itz Kahuna, who was just recently sentenced to 3 years in prison for compromising several government websites. He is, but lucky guy, he's still free right now. He just got convicted, but the court has given him until December 6th. To report to be incarcerated. How nice of them to grant him enough time to be with family at Thanksgiving and say his goodbyes to everybody before he goes. Did Higg get that? Did Wormer get that deal? Is Jeremy Hammond going to get that deal? Is Barrett Brown going to get that deal? Who else? How come he's the only one that gets that deal? I don't get it. I really, to be honest, I don't really get the whole Kahuna situation to begin with. I'm hoping to, between now and the time he is incarcerated, I'm hoping to set up an exclusive interview with him. I wouldn't cross my fingers on that one, folks, but... I sure would love to get his side of the story. I know a lot of people are opinionated. I know there's a lot of hate directed towards his direction, and I just think it's funny because essentially, Wormer and Kahuna, they both were in the same cabin crew. They were both anons. They were both hackers. They both went after government and law enforcement institutions, but they're both getting roughly the same amount of time. But everybody hates, for the most part, it seems like the community is really hates on Kahuna in general, and Wormer kind of gets. He's almost like a messiah or something. Like he gets all kinds of love. Now I'm not convinced. I'm not taking sides. I'm not biased either way. Okay, I look at them as two different individuals. I don't honestly. That's just how I look at the world. People have relationships and stuff, but when you're talking about the law. And stuff, you know, each case-by-case basis, there's all, even if they're related crimes, you know, there's so many idiosyncrasies that you have to examine in each case. You can't just willy-nilly blindly say they did the exact same goddamn thing. Now, it appears to me from what I can tell at this point, that Kahuna's problem is the way just sort of the damage control, the PR of his situation, how he handled that in the aftermath. I think he came off as kind of at least this is other people relaying this to me. I didn't really pay attention at the time. But people were making it seem like he was kind of, I don't know, being a dick, being pompous. Being dramatic, you know, people accuse his girlfriend of burning a lot of bridges, and there were even some suggestions of that Kahuna might have informed on Wormer, but that's not how Wormer got caught. He didn't get caught because he was informed on. He got caught because he was a dumbass, and on one of his defaces, he put a picture of his chick's tits. and he forgot to scrub it of its metadata. And that's how the fucking cops caught him, all right? It had nothing to do with Kahuna. Maybe Kahuna was, for whatever reason, cheering or happy to, you know, misery loves company. But, yeah. So that's a scenario that kind of baffles me. And at some point, I wanted to address that. And I know a lot of people that listen to my show and run in these circles have an opinion about that. So if you want to chime in about that tonight, that'd be cool. Or not. Ooh, Nigger Christ in the house. What up, NC? The Black Messiah. What else is going on here? Twitter has announced its IPO. We touched that on that a little bit on Friday. Wondering what people's thoughts are on that. Twitter, of course, is a private company at the moment, pretty much surviving on venture capital. I don't believe they have a profitable business model. Like, they definitely generate revenue, but I don't know if they're profitable or not. And the thing is, now that they're going public, there's this new rule, conveniently, that if your company goes public and your market cap or your evaluated net worth is under, I think, $1 billion, then you don't have to disclose any financial records. So I could form an LLC. Well, hey, you know, our good friends at Euronon News, they have an LLC. What the hell, man? Why don't you take that shit public? I don't think there's a YAN ticker symbol on the New York. It'd probably be the NASDAQ, right? But why not go public? What the fuck? You'd qualify, Yan. You're an on news because you've only got what, $60,000 that you're sitting on. You know, maybe count all assets included. Let's say maybe, you know, let's be generous. Let's say you have a Euronon News has in overall assets, both cash on hand and various commodities and other stuff, or miscellaneous stuff that has value. Let's say Euronon News is worth about $100,000, okay? That's pretty conservative. That's well below the $1 billion threshold. I think Euronon News should go public. Maybe once people are shareholders in Euronon News, they will have more influence in shareholder meetings to expedite the process of distribution of T-shirts and mugs. That's just an idea. It's just one example. You can apply that in anything. Okay, folks. What else? Oh, David McKay this week confronted his FBI informant, Brandon Darby, via Skype at the Huffington Post studios in New York City. And that, I don't know if you folks saw that, but that was an interesting interview. I think it's about 24 minutes long. You can find it online. I'm sure it's on YouTube or something. But this whole thing was to promote this new documentary that's out by Jamie Metzler and it's called The Informant, or it's called Informant, and it chronicles Brandon Darby's involvement in being a federal informant. while engaging in radical left-wing activism. And I haven't finished the movie. I tried to watch it before the show, but I couldn't get through the whole thing yet. But so far, I like it a lot. I think it's good. But I'm hoping to get through it later tonight, and then I hope to have a full-on show about it. But I think it's interesting, especially considering the community and that I run in here on online and on Twitter. You know, there's always people are always like the biggest joke. One of the biggest jokes on the internet is everybody's a fed, right? Like, there's no girls on the internet, and if you're a dude, you're either a pedophile or a fed, perhaps both. It's like the go-to insult when you don't know anybody, which online nobody really knows anybody online, you know, off the bat. Not even close. So what do? You resort, you call him a faggot. Oh, you know what? Faggot? Actually, I'm gay. Oh, really? Oh, that doesn't offend you? Okay. You must be a pedophile then. Actually, no. I'm happily married to an adult. I have a very serious, committed relationship with an adult. Aha. That only leaves one thing. You're a fed. That's the internet mentality for you in a nutshell. But yeah, over the last, what was it, 2 or 3 years now? 2 years now, you know, the hacker community, the anonymous community has been the running punchline in the community over the last 2 years has been Sabu, Hector Montsegur, or something or other. I don't even know how you say his name. But yeah, and you've got Adrian Lamo, who's been on the show before. Sabu's been on the show before, too. So if I were to land Brandon Darby on the show, that would not be the first Fed informant I've ever had on. But what makes me think that Sabu probably won't go into witness protection? First of all, he loves attention. He wants to be validated. I talked to the guy several times. He's got pie in the sky plans. He wants to write a couple books about Anonymous and he wants to do speaking engagements, and he wants to be a celebrity. And to an extent, he is a celebrity on the internet. Obviously, probably the smart thing to do for Hector is to go under witness protection. But hey, Adrian Lamo didn't go under witness protection, and a lot of people hate him. I would say just as many people hate Lamo as they hate Sabu. So I don't think it actually would be that big a thing if Sabu walked one day and didn't go into witness protection. I got far enough through that Brandon Darby documentary, though, to find out that he was offered witness protection. I thought that was interesting, and he turned it down. So just things to think about. Like this guy Brandon Darby informed on, I think he just got out of prison, or one of them just got out of prison, and he was in for 4 years. And if you look at Sabu's case, what was the worst that any of those kids got? Pretty much all the kids in the UK are already out of jail, if they even went to jail. I mean, freaking the ringleader, Topiary, Jake Davis, he's already on Twitter. I mean, and he talks about every. I can't believe he's not. He must have really, really, really loose terms of release for what he can say on Twitter. I think the only thing he can't do is follow anonymous accounts. I think he can talk about anything. So wow, they really showed Lulzsec, didn't they? I think the person that's going to get the worst of it is going to be Jeremy Hammond. Jeremy Hammond, and the only reason why he's going to get it worse than anybody else is because he's a repeat offender. The guy has done this, like, that's his whole life. This is what he does. So he's not even going to get that much time. He'll probably get, like, 4 years. And he'll come out, and he'll go back and do it again, and go back in for another 5 years. So I kind of think people are hating on Sabu a little bit more than they should. I think he did what he had to do for his own reasons, and if the reasons are correct, you know, people say he decided to do it because he, you know, because of kids. Apparently, he's a caregiver to two young nieces. And I can understand something like that. I can't fault somebody for making that choice. So in the process, what does he do? He helps the feds. He helps catch these kids. Most of them who only get like a slap on the wrist in the UK. And you know, he's going to get his sentencing when next month, and then. You know, he'll probably be put away for a couple of years, and he'll be back, and he'll write books, and all these people are going to write books and make money off of this. That's the beauty of going to prison. It forces you to write your book that you're going to sell when you get out and make millions of dollars. Sabu could do that. Bradley Manning could certainly do that, no doubt about it. But, yeah. Anyhoot. So there's that. And then what else? Much more. Yeah. Good times. Okay. I'm going to take a quick break, screen some calls, and hopefully be back with... Wait. Let me do this before I screen calls. I want to say hello and acknowledge... all the chatters in the chit-chat room. Let's say hello to Actions, Anthesis, Cesar, Chef Bonardee, Consolence, Daddy Dantalion. Danny, I liked your theme music, your intro music. If you want, send me a link to that song, and I could so easily whip up a cool little intro for you. Like, I just take that song, and I'll put a voiceover of me going, "And now, Daddy Dantalion." Or you could send me something to write. You write something for me to say on the intro. I don't care. But I think that music got me fired up for you, dude. I was like, fuck yeah, Danny's coming on. This is bad. I want some fucking theme music. It's the theme for the Shield from WWE. Okay, could you just find the YouTube link and send me that? It's pretty badass, dude. Send me the link and then give me like a tagline to say over it, you know, and I'll send it to you and Rebel, and you can play it on your show. I used to do that back in the day. I've been getting lazy. I used to be the late night BTR, like resident voiceover person. Like, I would go on to shows and I wouldn't even pre-record stuff. I would just hang out Oh, what's his name? Johnny Carson's buddy, Ed McMahon. I was like the Ed McMahon of some of these late night BTR shows. There's this one called Sidebar with a Mrs. PG. There's this huge black chick, had a dirty ass mouth. She was really cool though. And I was like the token white guy, and I would always introduce the show something like, "Gentlemen, start your boners. It's time for another edition of the Sidebar with Mrs. PG." Yeah. Okay. I didn't even finish my fucking roll call. Who else do I have in here? Oh, yeah. So I talked to... Oh, yeah. So we got Chef Bone RD, Consulence, City of Flint, Danny Dantelia, and a bunch of guest listeners. iBots in the house. Liebel Droser in the building. That is actually the parent company of Chronicle.SU. Although there are rumors on Wall Street that there might be that Rupert Murdoch is considering a bid to purchase Chronicle.SU from Liebel Droser. And we'll see if we will confirm or deny that tonight. My sources are saying, though, that Rupert Murdoch is, in fact, formulating a bid to purchase the Chronicle.SU. Although Liebel Droser in the chat says, "Rupert Murdoch is my puppet." No, I think it's the other way around, dude. I think Rupert Murdoch wants you to be his puppet. Oh, my God. I wish I had that song right now queued up. "I'm not your puppet." Oh, cool. Danny's got that. Danny Dantelian has posted the link to the epic song. All right. Sweet. Thanks, dude. I'll get on that. All right, who else do we have in here? Liebel Droser, Okanagan, blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Rinsera, Russell League Radio Live. I believe that would be CNY Rebel. What up, CNY Rebel? Thank you for the lovely sentiments that you shared with me last night and having me on as a guest. And if you missed it last night, Russell League Radio, they're doing a series of roasts. They're going to roast people on their show, and they decided to do the first one on me. And I think it was a good idea. You guys got a lot of kinks to work out. That was kind of a crappy roast. I'll admit, I wasn't exactly prepared myself, but I don't know if you've noticed for example, the Comedy Central roasts, but usually most of those speeches are written out ahead of time and collaborated on with comedy writers. So maybe try that next time. Okay. Also, try to get some females on. Where's the Meeps? Get Meeps on there. Roasting people. She's good at talking shit. She's funny. Okay. So callers, if you're going to call into the show tonight, the number is 347-826-7667. You call that number, you press the number 1, and that will alert me that you're ready to come on the air. If not, you can just sit back and relax. But once again, if you call in, especially if you're one of my guest callers, because I do have several people on the switchboard, but nobody has their hand up. So callers, at any point, if you're one of my guests, you should definitely press 1 to alert me that you're on hold. But outside of that, if you want to chime in, again, press 1. Have I stressed this enough? You call in the call-in number, and then to get into the host queue, you press the number 1. Oh, we have Shady Player in the house. What's up, Shady Player? Vert. Worth of the World. Zass. And last but not least, Zink. Oh, one Nodis is here, too. And Billy Ray Bob. I feel like fucking Miss Nancy or whoever from Romper Room. I'm looking through my magic mirror. But it's whatever. Okay, I'm going to take a break and come back, hopefully, with my first guest. I'm hoping it'll be one of these five people, either Kilgore, Hatesec, Stranahan, Sicko, or Caesar. Any of you guys want to jump on here, press the number one, and we'll let the games begin. I'll be right back after these messages from Street Sweeper Social Club.
Disorderly Conduct with your host Vince in the Bay.
Don't quit your day job.
Mentre la multinazionale Thomson si è impadronita di tutti I brevetti della DPL, la ricerca ufficiale sembra si sia concentrata su applicazioni industriali di scarso interesse sociale e comunicativo, il sogno dei pionieri delle realtà virtuali perché queste siano condivise da più persone ed economicamente accessibili a tutti sembra allontanarsi. Ma la sperimentazione indipendente non si è fermata e oggi, grazie ad alcuni geniali creativi, è possibile accedere a dei sistemi di realtà virtuale a basso costo posto e condivisibili. Parliamo di rientro a hotel, finale in bancotti.
These top fighters are really something else.
Flawless victory. Friendship.
Call in now, biatches. 347-826-7667. And now your host, Vince in the Bay.
What up, silly Negro?
Okay. And we're back. Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. I'm very, very pleased to have you all here with me tonight. And we're going to get to it here in just a second with my guests. Of course, that tune, if you were curious, is a cover of Paper Planes by MIA, who samples a Clash song, but the cover is by Street Sweeper Social Club, and that features Boots Riley from The Coup on vocals, and Tom Morello of Rage Against the Machine and Audio Slave fame on guitar. It was a little side project that those guys did. They put out two pretty rockin' albums. One of originals and another one of covers. And that was obviously from the record of covers. And with that business taken care of, I am now going to rush to the phone lines and bring out my first guest. He is a contributor at Chronicle.su. I'm talking about Hatesec. Welcome to the show, Hatesec.
Hatesec. Hi, Vince in the Bay. How are you doing? It's good to be here, Chronicle.su.
Oh, it's great to have you, bro. Definitely stoked to have you back on the show. It's been a while. And I like to check in with internet media from time to time. And you guys always bring a lot of insight. I'm also excited to have Stranahan on soon here as well to talk about some stuff that he's working on for Breitbart. What are you guys following right now over at Chronicle.su? What's hot over there?
Well, right now we're looking obviously at the same old things like chemtrails and whatever. I'm interested in this guy Stranahan's Breitbart thing right now. Geez, we're looking at the red pill. You know what the red pill is?
Is that a reference to the Matrix?
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, like if you take the red pill, then you know, like what if, right? Like what if you took the red pill? So this is reality. This is dumb. Okay, I don't even know why I'm explaining it to you like that. Red Pill is this group of people on the internet. It's like 15,000 Reddit users who are like pickup artists in a way, but just totally like belligerent and sexist about it. I thought maybe you'd heard of this because when I signed on to Blog Talk Radio today, I saw that they were like the featured radio show.
Oh, wow.
Red Pill Radio.
Oh,
big.
Dude, you're gonna have to link me. You're gonna have to link me. I'm not familiar.
This is how to pick up a girl if you've never talked to a girl successfully before. If you happen to be homosexual and in denial, the red pill is a way of, I guess, embracing that and making something.
Is red pill, is red pill a magazine or is it an actual red pill that you ingest?
It's an ideology.
Oh, brother.
This is what we're examining at the Chronicle.su right now. Among Miley Cyrus, of course, not to lose the audience, and her new video where that's a metaphor for her career, right? Like she's on the wrecking ball and, like, destroying it.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
so obviously
totally.
We're watching the Miley situation closely. We're expecting
Hurricane Miley
to, as she approaches land, maybe reach Category 3.
Excellent. So, moving on, what are some of the things, some of the things I touched on earlier, I'm curious to get your take on it. We have this crazy geopolitical catastrophe going on right now, at least diplomatically, over this Syrian nonsense. What do you think of how Putin and Obama and all the other parties involved are handling this?
You're asking me, right? I would like to think that Putin is satisfying whatever mafioso needs are behind him that are taking place in the Syrian Avenue. It's important to uphold that dictatorial regime where there's at least some structure and it provides a backdoor to these nefarious activities. Obama recognizes this, and he wants to look like a tough guy, so he's putting on the heat publicly when privately I doubt he ever intended to send missiles at all. Now, that's not to defend him. I mean, he completely usurped that whole thing where Congress has to give you approval and was sure to remind us on television that, like, hey, I could still bomb them. I'm just, like, not going to, but just letting you know that if I wanted to, I would, but I'm not going to. But I still might. And I thought that that was really just sort of American of him. And Putin and Bashar al-Assad, do you know where he is right now?
I believe he's in Vegas somewhere. No, I don't know. I have no clue.
He was working the Flamingo Lounge, right? In Vegas?
Right. He's doing two shows a night. It's great. Two drink minimum.
Last I heard, he was in Iran. I can't imagine him returning to his country the way it is right now.
Interesting. Where did you find that? Hear that he was in Iran?
This was a good week or two ago. He was probably safer there. I mean, if you thought your place could be struck by a missile from a drone, I think.
Get the fuck out.
Yeah. So he got out. I can't imagine him being back in anytime soon. But I don't think he's going to lose power. And everybody knew that Russia had a stake in this. I think it was just hilarious that 2 years ago, we wrote on the Chronicle that Obama said you can't declare support for terrorism. You can't even say, like, I think that what al-Qaeda is doing might be okay, right? And then now, this year, we find out that the United States has been funneling all this money into al-Qaeda, like directly into al-Qaeda because it opposes Russia's will. Just really, really funny stuff. Like, we can be arrested, even you and I, Vince. They could storm our house right now because here I am telling you what a great person I am. I think you are for supporting al-Qaeda and, like, what a noble thing they're doing.
I don't support al-Qaeda.
But
okay.
But America does, and you've got to – are you an American or are you not?
Hey, just because I'm
American –
are you a
patriot, Vince?
Just because I'm an American doesn't mean I approve of everything people do in the name of America, okay?
That's your first problem.
I will not blindly support anything, all right? Like, the whole, like, do you support the troops or not? I support the troops that are out there getting shit done, who are keeping their nose clean, who are working hard. The ones I don't support are the ones like, oh, I don't know, I saw a couple in Afghanistan on YouTube with a puppy, and they thought it would be funny to throw the puppy over a cliff. I don't support these two soldiers. Those two troops don't get Vince and the Bay support. Sorry. But I would say most of them who I would hope are there for the right reason, that are smart people, that are, you know, doing what they got to do. I mean, most of them, let's face it, are there because it's their only way out of nothing. You know, most of these people are from the Rust Belt where all the industry's gone. I mean, what are they going to do? Work at the local Walmart? That's what most of these people have to look for. So their only escape to get, you know, to get a college education in some cases is to join armed forces. I think if there was an avenue available to somebody, say like Bradley Manning, other than the military, for him to escape whatever situation he was in, because let's face it, that guy is a conflicted individual who was an ideologue and who probably shouldn't have been in the military in the first place, but he, you know, was probably in a scenario where he's just like, I don't know what the fuck to do with my life. Fuck it, I'll go to the military. They'll pay for my school. Hey, they might even pay for my sex change. And lo and behold, they are. So, you know,
are they going to pay for a sex change?
That's what I'm hearing. I can't. Maybe I can't totally verify that right now. Maybe somebody
that's
else
huge.
Can't. But I'm pretty sure I heard some talk that he's planning to get a sex change while he's in prison, and I don't think it's going to be on his dime. But I could be wrong. I mean, let's face it, he's got enough goddamn followers to raise enough money to pay for it anyway, so they might as well just do that. They probably could get a better physician, too.
They could, so he could become a girl, and that could help his case a lot, too, once he's a her, and then she's...
Well, if that was going to help his case, they would have done it 3 years ago. No, they waited until everything was over and said, all right, Brad, you can do your thing now. It's over. Because let's face it, if he was on trial as Chelsea, it would be more of a circus than it already was. Honestly, though, I think it would help him with an insanity plea. But for whatever reason, his defense decided, no, dude, seriously, just keep the goddamn. Just come on, dude, just be a dude for a couple more years, and then you can go to prison and be a chick, whatever you know.
I think it has a lot to do with this case because, I mean, dude, how much more can you possibly complicate the case than by saying, you know, right now I need a sex change, like right now, like while this is going on. Hey, here's another thing. Consider how free Bradley Manning, if you want to talk about Manning, consider how free he is right now.
I really don't want to talk about Bradley Manning, but
I don't
if you
either.
Want to...
I think it's a really boring conversation.
Yeah, I've dedicated whole shows to Bradley Manning. I'm over it. But did you have an anecdote you wanted to throw in real quick, though?
God, no. Please, no. Let's not.
All right.
Let's not do it.
All right, dude. Let's bring on my next guest. You know him as a contributor to Breitbart.com, Breitbart News reporter. And he's covered all kinds of stories. I think maybe folks here might most know him for his reporting last year on Steubenville. And tonight he's joining me, and he's going to talk a little bit about Syria and a planned trip he's going to take out there to report on the conditions of the refugees. So without any further ado, let's welcome Lee Stranahan. Hey, Lee.
Hey, Vince. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing great, man. I'm just chillaxing. I'm here with HateSec, and we're just shooting the breeze. What's up with you?
You know, the usual. The usual. I'm getting ready for this trip. I'm getting ready for this Middle East trip. I expect I will be there or on my way in a week. So
that's awesome. How long do you plan to stay there?
Well, we're about $500 from reaching the fundraising goal. After that, I'm not going to stop fundraising, but I'm going to stop talking about it. So if people want to go over and contribute, they can. But, you know, I'm not going to be pushing it. And then I'm going to buy my ticket on Tuesday. And kind of how long we stay will depend on how much I've raised. So in other words, right now, I would probably go over for about 8-9 days. If we get a little more money, I'll probably go over for a few more days. So,
Stranahan, can I just say that you're very lucky and you're very fortunate to be going over there to Syria, where we have these Al Qaeda troops looking out for you in the name of the United States.
Well,
I think that's a fortunate.
Well, let me be clear. I'm not talking about specifically where I'm going, but just do the calculus on this. I'm going to interview Syrian refugees. So if I was going to be interviewing people who are refugees from Syria, I can think of one country I would not be going to.
Yeah, so, I can too.
Right. So I'm just saying, I've never said anything different than I'm interviewing the refugees. That's what I'm interviewing. So the refugees are over in a number of countries now, but I'm going to one of them. But I'm not interested in getting into Syria itself is a very dangerous place right now, and it's a very dangerous place for journalists as well. Journalists have been kidnapped and killed over there, and I have lots of kids and a wife, and I'm not interested in being beheaded simply for the amusement of Vince and his audience.
It would become an animated GIF.
I didn't catch that. Did you say you were going to come back and give head to Vince and his audience?
No, close. You're close, but not exactly. But anyway, I am looking forward to it. I mean, I came up with this idea about a week ago, and we were able to raise the money in a week, which is pretty amazing. And I think it's just the power of a good idea, basically. The refugee crisis, whatever happens with Obama and his missiles, you sort of indicated this earlier, Vince, I was listening to the show earlier, that the refugee crisis is huge. There's over 2 million people who've left Syria already. They're leaving at a rate of about 10,000 a day. And you've got 700,000 in Lebanon. You've got about the same in Turkey. You've got about the same in Jordan right now, and then you've got less in some other countries. But if you just look at Lebanon, for instance, you get 700,000 people in an area with 4.5 million natives. So that's like, a significant issue. And the world is not really equipped to deal with 2 million Syrian refugees. So, like I say, what I've said before is, and by the way, I'm guilty of this too, up until the saber rattling from Obama, I didn't really know much about what was going on in Syria. Were you following it, Vince?
I was. Full disclosure.
Uh-huh.
I listened to Webster Tarpley's weekly program religiously.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't agree with him on most points politically, but he is an amazing historian, and he's great at unearthing reporting that you don't see around a lot.
I've never listened to him. Who is he?
You can follow him on Twitter. He's Webster G. Tarpley. He used to be a regular on Alex Jones. He's a truther. He's a conspiracy theorist. But he does this weekly. He's based in D.C. He's been there forever. He's got to be in like his 70s or 80s. He's known as a historian. He's written a lot of books. And he does like fringe media like Al Jazeera or Press TV or RT. He's an avowed socialist. He's pushing for a 1% Wall Street sales tax. He's got a lot, but he's all over the map, and he's really, really in tune with the news, and Syria has been one of his main points of reporting. He actually went there for a couple of months at the end of 2011, and since then that's all he's talked about. He's at least touched. He has does a 2-hour broadcast, and he'll report something on it every week. And now that it's totally escalated, he's got a lot to say. And he's an interesting He's a great counterpoint to the mainstream narrative. I would take his opinion with a grain of salt, but I like listening to him because he brings up points that I don't think a lot of people do or that I might not otherwise think of. And he's really good at questioning the official narrative, which I think is important. Whether you're right or wrong, I think it's important to just question the validity of anything that we're spoon-fed by the media.
Well, no, and I follow a lot of different sources. I'm one of those people who, whenever people are like,
I think we got to be careful not to question our president in this time, or the government. Just throwing that out there. Go ahead with your sources, though. As long as they don't question the authority, I'm fine with it. Go ahead. Thanks.
I can tell you're sincere. People on the left will say, you know, like Fox shows, oh, Fox, I don't believe Fox. And people on the right will say, oh, MSNBC. And I've never, you know, when I broke the John Edwards story, news on that a few years ago, people were like, oh, it's the National Enquirer. And I'm like, I don't care. I mean, the Enquirer can be right about things. And sure enough, they were right about the Edwards story. And so I read a lot of different sources, which is why I follow you, Vince, because you're all, I mean, I like people who are sort of out of the mainstream. And I can figure it out. I can make up my own mind. But when I looked at it and I saw what was going on in Syria, I was like, I got to get over there. And, you know, a couple of years ago might have been a good time to go to Syria. Right now I think it's a good time to go to – Syria is the country I wouldn't go to right now. Turkey, Jordan.
You can't go there because Assad's not issuing visas.
Dude, Assad is not even going there. That's how crazy it is.
Yeah, right. Well, but you know, I think that right now you can go to Turkey, Jordan, Lebanon, a few other countries. I'm not sure in 6 months if you're going to want to be able to do that. I think because of the refugee crisis, things are going to blow up there even worse than they're blowing up now. And so I want to get in and try to do interviews. I'm doing interviews and audio and video with people, trying to do like a Shoah thing where I just want to get these people's stories, as many as I can, on the record. And I'm going to release it all Creative Commons so that anybody can – the audio and video that I take, I'm going to release it all in a Creative Commons license so anybody can use it. I'm really just trying to do first, you know, direct source interviews. I'm not trying to put any – spin on it. I'm going to be talking to people who are pro-Assad, who are anti-Assad, but I'm focusing on the Christians because I think all across the Middle East, I think the jihadists are very explicitly, they're trying to drive out the Christians. You could see that in Egypt with the Muslim Brotherhood and attacking the Coptic Christians over there, and I think the same thing's happening in Syria, so that's why I'm focusing on that. So that's that project. But that's not a Breitbart. That's an independent thing. I'm doing this independently. I'm sure I'm going to be reporting at Breitbart, but I raised all the money on my own, and I'm, and that allows me to do a Creative Commons license with it. You know.
That's cool.
That's good for you, man. Good for you.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's a little nerve-wracking, but.
Do you know anybody out there, or do you have any contacts? Is anybody hooking you up, or is this just like on the fly?
Well, like I say, I only started the project a week ago, but I've already gotten some very good contacts out there. You know, what happens is whenever you it's sort of like film producing, which I've done before, where there's like a zillion people who say they've got a script, right? Like everybody in L.A. Has a script, right?
Dude, I live in California, bro. I know. You go into Starbucks in L.A. and people are not checking their email on their laptops. They're working on scripts.
That's exactly right. But once you start saying – so, and you know, like I said, I lived in L.A. for a long time, so it's like everybody's got a script. But once you start actually making a film, like once you're like, okay, we're going. We're going to start shooting on October 1st. We're going to shoot for 3 weeks. Suddenly people go, okay, well, you're not full of shit. Like, you're really doing something. And so you kind of gain momentum from actually deciding we're gonna go on October 1st or whatever. So once I started saying I am going to the Middle East, people started contacting me and being like, I know some people over there. I have a friend, and a couple of journalists have contacted me, and they have good contacts. And then
stuff like that is probably more valuable than actual donations, because that's how you really get your story.
Yeah, it is. Well, but then what's going to? Yeah, but the donations make it possible to get over there and to cover. You know,
yeah, obviously.
It's like filmmaking. You got to get some money to make the film. But like filmmaking, let's say you think you need $100,000 to make your film, but really,
yeah, you got. Yeah,
you
there's
got
so many hidden costs.
But what happens is, but let's say you suddenly have $5,000. You're like, you know what? I can start it for $5,000, and I just assume that the rest of the money is going to show up because I'm actually making the movie. And sure enough, it does. So it's the same thing here. Like, I announced that I was going for sure before we had all the money in place, because I knew we would raise the money, basically. I knew that we had momentum. What's cool about it is everyone's told me that the way the Middle East works, I've never been there. I've been to Europe a few times, and I've been to Australia and Canada and Mexico, but I've never been to the Middle East. Everyone tells me the way it works is, they say what's going to happen is you'll meet people, and then you'll like have lunch with them or whatever, and then they'll introduce you to other people. They'll say like, oh, okay, well, this person, so once they know you and trust you, they say you'll get a lot of contact. So people said you should stay over there for more than a few. I was originally going to go for like 4 days, and they were like, no, dude, stay for longer than that, because you'll meet people, and they'll introduce you to people, and they'll introduce you to people, and so on and so on and so on.
Right on. Well, we got some more people that want to join this conversation. I want to bring on a caller who is former and I believe now current military, and he does a lot of work in relation to the to what's going down in Syria, and I believe he's got something to chime in about. I'm talking about WVU Beta Soldier. What's up, WVU Beta Soldier?
Hey, what's up, guys? How are we doing?
Hey.
Doing good, man. You're on with Lee Stranahan and Liebel Droser, a.k.a. lots of things.
Right.
I know him as Old Bruder. I don't know why he doesn't
old
just
Brutus.
Go as
Old. Old Brutus here.
I mean Old Bruder. Old Brutus. I'm sorry.
Right on. Hey, Lee, first of all, I completely agree. If you're going to be in the Middle East particularly for any period of time to try to get any valid story, definitely go for more than 4 days. Because of that reason. I guess the biggest thing that I want to hedge you against, man, be careful about getting one particular point of view. If you go to when it comes to the Christians in Syria, you will have a lot of Christians who are willing to say that the Syrian regime has treated them extremely awesomely, very well, and have for an extended period of time. Other people are going to tell you the Free Syrian Army has treated them very well. And other people are going to tell you that the Al-Qaeda types have treated them terribly, of course. So it's a cautious game you got to play you got to be conscious of the totality of the circumstance while you're interviewing the individuals. That makes sense.
Well, one of the journalists one of the journalists who's setting me up with people said, I will set you up with people who are pro-Assad and people who are anti-Assad. And he said, really, you're going to find that, you know, depending on who you talk to, you're going to get that point of view. So that's kind of built in to I really don't go into these things with any I go in with assumptions like anybody, but I don't go in with any preset agenda of
right.
like
I think
I'm a,
I think more, you know, more to the point would be really cool and would make your reporting when you come back home as complete as possible. Would be to talk to people who are from areas held by the regime, areas held by the Free Syrian Army, and areas held by Al-Qaeda Iraq and the Lebanon or whatever it is now.
Well, the people I was talking to somebody about this. Aleppo is an area in Syria that's held. It's basically a Sharia state now.
Right.
And I really want to talk to people from Aleppo. So I'm going to seek them out, but we'll see. You know,
You're gonna find a mixed bag. Just be careful to not get uniform reporting because especially when you're dealing with the Middle East, where you start to get in with people. That's why 4 days is not enough, honestly.
No. I'm going for at least 8 or 9.
Right. Well,
eight or nine.
it'll take about 4 days to get in solid with one group. And
right.
And then you should move on to another group that has an opposing point of view. So while you should be able to find Christians who hate Al Qaeda pretty easily. If you just go that way, the way that you're reporting and the way that your opinion will be when you leave there will be colored 100% anti the rebellion. If you were to wander yourself into a camp that's maybe probably in Turkey or so, where you would find an anti-regime camp that's also Christian, you would find yourself in a camp that would talk about the opposite, and it's just.
Well, what I'm interested in finding out is it's real good advice. What I'm interested in finding out, this is one of the things I want to know. So let's say you've got a pro-regime and an anti-regime group. I'm curious if they have uniform answers on whether they think America should be involved. My guess going in is that nobody wants America involved. Really, my guess going in is that everyone's going to be like, yeah, why don't you guys just stay out? But I could be, maybe I'm wrong. That would be interesting.
My thought is from the Christian perspective, you're probably correct. I think most Christians in Syria would give that perspective. I think that's probably true.
But again, that's my assumption. But if I'm wrong, then I'm curious.
I'll be surprised if that is wrong. My best guess is that pretty much uniformly amongst the Christians, you're going to find that to be a true statement.
Hey Vince, let's make sure we talk about informant too, because that's the
other reason. Yeah. I definitely want to talk about informant. I also want to just do a whole show on that. I haven't seen the whole movie all the way through. I tried to get through it before the show, but I didn't have enough time. But so far, so good. I love it, and I definitely want to talk about it for sure.
Well, just because in terms of a proxy, I mean, I know that story about as well as anybody who's not Brandon Darby or David McKay or Bradley Crowder. I mean, I mentioned it on Twitter before. But Informant's a movie about Brandon Darby, and I'm friends with Brandon. But I heard the original This American Life is like my favorite radio show ever, and I'd heard the Brandon Darby story years before I met Brandon. So I'd known the story, right? And then when I met Brandon, before I met him, I did a lot of research, including transcripts. And I know that story really well, Vince. So I mean, Brandon would come on and he'd say whatever he'd say. But I am probably Brandon's biggest defender in this, and the reason why is because I've studied this story. And,
hey, hold on. For the sake of the audience, could we go into what informant is?
Yeah, that's a good point. So, Vince, you want me to do it, or you want to do it?
I think you should do it. Go for it.
So Informant is one of two different films that have been made about this case of Brandon Darby, who is a left-wing activist. When I say left-wing, I mean Brandon's got a Black Panther tattoo. That's so bizarre.
That's one of the many things that I've learned recently that just like totally changed my perspective of him. Anyway, continue.
He still got it, too. I mean...
Of course. I mean, it's like Henry Rollins, dude. You know, that's history. That's your life.
That's right. So Brandon was a radical left wing activist who was friends with Panthers and stuff like that. After Katrina, he went into New Orleans to help rescue a friend of his who was part of the Panthers and stuff like that. Then he helped set up Common Ground Relief, and they were providing food and stuff like that for people. And he lived in Austin, and I used to live in Austin, too. So that's one of the reasons I paid attention when the story was in This American Life. So I used to live like 4 blocks from Monkey Wrench Books, which is where – it's a radical left-wing bookstore in North Loop. And it was walking distance from my house. And so that's where a lot of this originally went down. they had a meeting at Monkey Wrench for to basically bust the Republican 08 convention. It was a Republican dash. It was the RNC welcoming committee, and it was a bunch of anarchist and black bloc people who wanted to, you know, fuck shit up at the RNC 08, right? And they did a sort of recruiting meeting. They went around the country doing these recruiting meetings. So they did one in Austin at Monkey Wrench. Brandon, by this time, unbeknownst to other people in the left-wing community, was an FBI informant, which is a whole other story how he got into that. But he was an FBI informant. The FBI asked him to go to the Monkey Wrench book thing. He met these two guys, David McKay and Brad Crowder. So cut to 7 months later, they go up to the RNC. They're part of an affinity group with Brandon. They go up, and Crowder and McKay are going to fuck shit up at the RNC. And they get busted a little bit. The police pull them over. They'd made these shields that had, like, nails in them. The police took those shields, so Crowder and McKay decided that they were going to make Molotov cocktails. And they got busted for that. They got arrested by the FBI. When they're about to go to trial, turns out that Brandon Darby comes out and says, I was the informant. I'm the one who helped bust these guys. And everyone on the left freaked out. People like Lisa Fithian and Scott Crow, who Brandon had worked with. Lisa Fithian's a real well-known organizer to this day, does work at Occupy and stuff like that. Scott Crow is a real well-known Earth First Alf Elf guy who, you know, again, these are both Austin people, Lisa and Scott. So they freak out. Everyone on the left freaks out. Brandon gets all these death threats against him. And then the whole story ends up on This American Life. They make one film about it called Better This World that Brandon did not participate in. Then they made another film about it called Informant, which is out now on iTunes and at some theaters. They're doing a platform release on some theaters. And so Brandon is really hated on the left. But I don't think he did anything wrong. He didn't. He was accused of entrapping these guys. He didn't do it. I'm giving you I can answer any questions you have on it. But he was accused of entrapping these guys. He didn't entrap them. That was made up, and it's admitted in the David McKay admitted he lied about that. So he wasn't entrapped. And then they tried to say other shit. They just don't like Brandon because he's not on the left anymore, which is whatever. But that's why they don't like him. They don't like him because he said. But David McKay and Brad Crowder are punks. I mean they were going. You know, again, if you're cool with Black Bloc violence, okay, fine. But, I mean, David McKay's a guy who threw shit off an overpass. He took a big construction sign and threw it off an overpass, and there were cars below. So, I mean...
Which is not documented on film.
It's on film, right. It's on film. It's like,
it's in the documentary. I saw it. Right. It's in the documentary.
Yeah, no, I'm not making any of this shit up. Everything I say, I researched and was able to go boom. And then when I looked into it, Here's the thing. Here's how I know that they didn't entrap him. Because I used to live near Monkey Wrench, the first thing I did when I started looking into the story was I said, okay, did these guys just like wander into Monkey Wrench and they didn't know what they were doing? And no, I found that there was a recruiting sign that they plastered up around Austin. Come, you know, we're going to fuck up the RNC. You know, come to this meeting about it, right? So anybody who went to that meeting, you walked into that meeting knowing what you were doing, right? You knew you were at Monkey Wrench. You knew what the event was about. And then I found it's up online. You can look for it. Go to YouTube and look in RNC Welcoming Committee. There's a video that they made about it. It's funny. It's a bunch of Black Bloc people, and it's like a day in the life of a Black Bloc person. They're in their ninja outfit eating cereal in the morning, and then they throw a Molotov cocktail and, it, you know, light a barbecue with it. But it's obvious that it was Black Bloc people doing it. So Crowder and McKay went to that meeting with in mind that they were going to go fuck shit up at the RNC. And if you know anything about Black Bloc, which Vince, I know you do, you know that that's a tactic, like that's an acceptable – the Black Bloc people are very clear about what they want to do, right? It's a you know, diversity of tactics thing, and they're pushing that envelope of property destruction and so on and so forth, right? So that's what they're doing. So if you think that that's cool and that's okay, that's fine, but it's illegal, you know. And Brandon didn't make those guys do anything. That's what they were interested in doing. And so, you know, that's where the only time they started blaming Brandon was after he outed himself as an informant. If you look at their original plea, their original story, they didn't say anything about, oh, Brandon made us do it. But once they got busted, they decided to start to put it on to Brandon. And this is a matter of historical record. You can look at the transcript. Once Brandon came out and said, I'm an informant, suddenly their best defense was to blame the informant. And it played.
Well, Lee, you understand the sensitivity of that to the liberal community, right? There have been instances, even within the jihadist community, where you have, which is not a community I sympathize with at all, clearly.
Why not?
But, I know, right? Where you do have the FBI informants who are or who have been accused of instigating the individuals, maybe just malcontents.
No,
into violent activity just to get them arrested. So these people who would normally just be disgruntled with their lives, with their circumstance, have now been instigated by an FBI informant to do something. So they go and do the thing that they've been instigated to do, and then they get caught by the FBI doing that thing that the FBI told them to do.
Yeah, but
it's a pattern, and it is at least from the perspective of many individuals, and one I can sympathize with.
No doubt about it. It's a pattern that is played out in the media over and over again, from this situation to Sabu in the anonymous community to the Occupy community, where you have these kids who are on trial for plotting to blow up a bridge in Cleveland, I believe. And they
exactly.
were set up.
Yeah. Shouldn't surprise.
And they
shouldn't
were set up.
They were set, but,
no,
they
hold on
set
one second.
No,
let me finish. Let me finish real quick. It shouldn't surprise anybody sat at the aisle. It shouldn't surprise anybody on any side of the aisle that you have at least people who are not involved in the circumstance questioning that this might be another one of those cases.
Well,
and go ahead and state your case, but just understand that that's where other people are coming.
This
well,
is ridiculous.
Allow me to retort.
Go ahead.
So I've looked into those cases, and in fact, those cases were not the FBI entrapping anybody. In fact, there are very, very few cases that are brought up. Almost every one of those cases, I reported on the guys in Cleveland who were connected with Occupy Cleveland who were going to blow up a bridge. And guess what? They were going to blow up a bridge. No one made them do that. No one made them instigate that. So that story takes a dive. All of these stories, I started to look into them. They're all lies. Here's my position. And I write about this at Breitbart. I used to be on the left. The radical left are a bunch of fucking liars. They are scumbag liars who make up shit, literally make up shit, because it fits a narrative. And in almost every case, and I go back to the 60s, and I didn't know this, like Angela Davis,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, not at all.
And no, I'm 48. So, but I started researching recently. Angela Davis, for instance, right? Angela Davis was guilty. She should have gone to jail. But it's very hard to find out the actual
Mole,
facts.
S-H-I-T.
Yep.
Well, let's talk about I'll talk about the Angela Davis case anytime you want. She was
Angela Davis was a saint. I will not have her name defiled on this station. Angela Davis was a saint. Thank you very much.
There you go. See, it's always hard to tell the snark. But I mean,
let me give somewhat of a response here. While I don't particularly monitor instances of domestic jihadism like other people do, I can speak a little bit to some of these things. What bothers a lot of people, you have these internal investigations that go on. For instance, I believe a report just came out recently in the media where you have the FBI investigating FBI instances of shooting.
By the way, folks, you are listening to WVU Soldier. Just so you know, this is WVU Soldier.
Yeah, keep going.
Thanks for
identifying
that, Ben.
No,
but you have that.
I appreciate talking to WVU. That allowed me to retort thing. I was just doing a Samuel L. Jackson line. I like WVU, and I appreciate the back and forth.
You totally sound just like him.
But you have cases,
for instance, like the FBI investigating the own FBI's. Every time the FBI discharges, an FBI agent discharges his weapon, it gets investigated by the FBI. And I believe there have been zero instances in the last 300 or some ridiculous amount of number. I just made 300 off the top of my head. Something in the last 12 years or so where there have been zero instances of any sort of negligent discharge in all of the shootings of any FBI weapon ever in the past, like, 30 years. And that's just – it's insane. And you understand why public trust in these things gets eroded.
I believe that
you're saying that there are reports out there that prove that there is no instance that any FBI agent ever did anything incorrectly.
That's not what I'm saying.
To cause these guys to plant bombs. Well, you've named specific.
Oh no! Wait! I'm sorry. Sorry. In this case, negligently discharge their weapon.
But you understand how the public trust gets eroded over time as a result of these.
I do understand how the public trust gets eroded, and the way it gets eroded is
people like you, Lee.
Is leftist. The way it gets eroded is leftist.
It's this leftist liberal agenda. Exactly. I know. That's what I've been saying all along.
Let me finish.
All right. Let's give Lee the floor for just a second. I got other callers who are anxious, so hang on.
It's provably true. And by provably true, I mean I can go back and show you what Herbert Marcuse says or what Saul Alinsky says or what any of these guys say, that were clearly influential in the 60s, movement and beyond. There is an agenda that they have of eroding trust in public figures and public authorities. And you can, whatever, when I throw around, I don't call someone a Marxist, like, unless they're a Marxist. I don't call someone an anarchist unless they're an anarchist. So I don't throw those terms around loosely, but there are, in fact, such things as Marxists. The Weather Underground were Maoist Marxists, right? Angela Davis is a Marxist.
Wannabe Maoist Marxists. Come on. They were just – they were influenced by that, but they were just hippies having fun.
They weren't just hippies having – this is the whole point. They weren't just hippies having fun. If you want to go to the 60s, for instance, the Weather Underground, the SDS, the weather people in particular, were influenced by the Panthers, and the Panthers – were people like George Jackson, who were generally Oakland street criminals, who in prison read Mao, read Autobiography of Malcolm X, read stuff like that, and had a political conversion. And this is just all history. If you look at George Jackson's history, that whole group of people, the Panthers, Bobby Seale, group of people.
If
you look at what they were doing, right? So when I say they're Marxist, I'm not throwing it around McCarthy-like. That they're Marxist, right?
All right. You know what? Actually, Lee, I have now that you just bring that up. I have a guest that I want to introduce who happens to be not only a Marxist, but he is also a former Black Panther. I'm talking about Kilgore. Welcome, Kilgore.
Hey, Vince. You know, I don't have a Black Panther tattoo, but I do have a Panopticon tattoo. So,
yeah.
Lee, have you read much Marx?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, yeah?
I have the Communist Manifesto on my Kindle.
What is it about his theory that makes these leftists so violent and, murderous? What is it about it?
Well, okay, if you want to get to a base philosophical level, I think the problem with Marxism is it has it requires human beings to be different than they are. And Marx's theory was that human beings would evolve after after we go through the stages of economic development that he pictured going through. Marx believed that human nature would literally change. And as
yeah,
soon
I
as
know,
you,
I know. Is
whoa,
the biggest
whoa,
mystery?
Whoa,
and
whoa
you
hang
know what
on.
The biggest mystery?
Hang on a second. I don't care if Mark said it. I don't say it care if Mark said it or Lee ad-libbed it. We have a violation, everybody.
Sorry, Vince.
No, it's not you, dude. It's actually Lee.
Yep.
Oh,
Lee.
Wow.
2 minutes,
sorry,
Lee.
Lee.
You get a timeout for 2 minutes for using the word L, the L word, which is literally.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm pretty strict with that word. I went back and forth. At first, it was just like, if you even use the word, you're on timeout.
What if you use it alongside of figuratively so that you absolutely know what it means? Like it's
no,
a...
because no. I did not vote for them to add that because a couple months ago they Merriam-Webster Dictionary added a new definition to literally, meaning like something to enhance your excitement or something. Blah blah blah. It doesn't basically they added a definition that says literally doesn't mean literally. It means figuratively. And that's the most retarded thing I've ever heard in my life. That in a microcosm is what has destroyed the fabric of our society. Okay? And
I think Lee is onto something though here. I think he might be onto something.
No. But it's just okay, it's not even bad enough that people use the term literally incorrectly.
Oh, no.
It's just the fact that they use it to embellish everything. Like you don't even need it half the time. You know, it's like, oh, the television is literally on the table as I'm talking to you.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's kind of an empty word.
It's totally empty, dude. The TV is on my table right now. I'm looking at it.
Doesn't
Why?
Tell me anything if you say literally.
There.
Doesn't tell
somebody,
me anything.
Somebody, please. Save me.
Well, I want
dude,
to go back without...
Dude, I'm sitting on my chair
looking
at my chat room, bro.
Literally.
Man, we have totally...
he said a lot of literally as well. He's been in the.
We've totally evolved as a species, and I'll admit I'm part of the problem.
You're exactly right. We've devolved. Did you know that the hunter gatherers out there only had to work 4 hours a day? But then there must have been some Neanderthal Marx who said, "Hey, let's all work together." And then at that point in time, everyone had to work 12 hours a day and farm and shit and do all sorts of extra work just for the greater good so we could have cities and civilizations. That would talk about a change in human behavior. They must have had some crazy guy just like Marx and all sorts of violence too because, you know, I guess civilization itself is Marxist if you look at it from Lee's point of view, which is brilliant. I really think Lee is onto something there. You should elaborate on that some more.
Yeah, I'm going to bring him back off of timeout in a second, but you just made me think of something. I was on Twitter the other day, and I used to follow this guy. I don't remember his name exactly. He's like I think he's in the UK, dark-looking guy, probably a Pakistani or an Indian transplant to the UK.
Uh-huh.
Economist dude, a verified account, and he's always pissed off and talking all this shit, talking about corporations and stuff. It's like, oh, look who's talking, dude, with the fucking verified corporate account.
Sounds like a guy we know, you know, what's his name? Glenn Greenwald and his...
Oh, I can't even follow that.
Media corporate rhetoric.
I put people like that
on mass media.
I put people like that on lists now. It's like if I want to see the whiny fame fags, I got a list for that. I don't have to follow that shit on my regular timeline.
You don't want none of that. Who's got time for that?
Have you gone to Glenn Greenwald's timeline in the last couple of days? At least for me, every time I go in there, it's him retweeting a headline about himself or his boyfriend.
favoriting himself left and right.
I'm going to answer some tweets right now. It's Jess, who's cute as a plum. If that's her real, she might be a trap. I don't know. That could be a fake picture. I don't know. It could be like 10 years old, but it doesn't matter. She's cute. Whoever's in that picture, you're cute. But she goes by Boxes of Pandora, and she says, I think it's hilarious when you put adults in timeout for saying literally incorrectly, Vincent the Bay, you sound so mad. I'm not mad. I'm just enforcing the rules. I'm a benevolent dictator. I make no bones about it. This is your free speech ends at, this is a no free speech zone. Your First Amendment rights are not relevant once you enter my chat room or call into my show. I reserve the right to mute you for any reason whatsoever. You'll notice I don't mind if you use four-letter words. I don't penalize people for that. I just penalize people for stuff that I think is outdated, retarded, jump the shark, whatever you want to call it. So you cannot give shout-outs on here. We do not allow shout-outs. 89-year-old women give shout-outs, not us. Okay, we're the internet people. We don't talk. We're ahead of that, okay? We're ahead of the curve. You cannot use the phrase at the end of the day. That's the most retarded phrase ever uttered. At the end of the day, we're all human. Not when we wake up and have breakfast. Not when we take the kids and drop them off at school. Not at lunchtime when we're eating salsa and chips with our coworkers. Not when we kiss our spouse when we come home from work. Not at the dinner table. But at the end of the day, when you're going to bed and you're nodding off, we're all human.
Basically, okay. We're all sick at the end of the day.
Okay. Okay, Stranahan, you're back. You're off timeout. Thank you for being patient. HateSec, you're back on. I'm also going to bring on WVU Soldier. We're going to probably engage in some audio spaghetti in a minute, but I have two people that have been waiting super ultra patiently. I'm going to go first to Caesar. Caesar, you've been waiting super extra patiently. What's up, bro?
What's up, guys? I actually finished that documentary on Darby.
Oh, really?
Oh, boy.
What are your thoughts on that?
I thought it was well made. I personally went in thinking he's a fucking rat. So, and obviously, the opinion didn't change at all. But it was a well-made documentary. That's really all I can say about that.
Who's Brandon
Literally.
Darby? What's up with Brandon Darby?
What
was
well,
he
we went
going
over
to do? It was. I fell asleep. Sorry.
Well, why? There's like two films about him now. So.
Yeah, you got to see the films.
Better This World or Informant?
Well, there's lots of films out there.
It's one of the, yeah, it's just one of the tactics people use against Brandon. Brandon who? It's like, I don't know, they make two films about the dude. So,
dude, I've been, you know, we all got together before this show,
dude,
and it's like, let's come up with some tactics.
Too, though. He's kind of famous on the internet, though. Like on Twitter, he's semi-famous on Twitter, I would say. Like he's
How many
famous
followers
the,
does he have? How many followers does he have?
He's no. I would say he is famous in the right wing blogosphere, which is pretty sizable.
And the far
oh,
and
he's
the far
vilified
left.
By the left, and he's vilified by the left. So he's got his haters on the left. So there's people over there that are paying attention to him too. And
does
you know, I was thinking about it at first. Lee, you tweeted out that you should do a Brandon Darby Film Festival. And I know I kind of poo-pooed you on that at first, but now, like, after I have time to think about it, what the fuck? You should do it. Just curate it online, man. It'd be so easy.
That's a good idea. No, look, I live in Dallas, and we have two Angelica theaters here, the indie theater chain. We have good theaters in Dallas, right? And if we did it, and it would be easy for me to do in Dallas because I live here. So if I four-walled the Angelica, there's enough Tea Party people in Dallas who would show up because it's Brandon.
Yeah. You're right.
There'll be enough haters too.
And also the haters will show up too, which is great. They'll pay to hate on him. That's beautiful.
Well, I used to say this when Occupy Unmasked came out, when the film Occupy Unmasked came out. I always thought it would be cool if Occupy Unmasked played with like the 99% film that's out now, right? Like, to me, that's a good double feature because I grew up. What's the theater in Hayward where they do Rocky Horror Picture Show? I forget. But I mean, when I lived in San Leandro back in the day, that's the kind of theater where they'd show like, you know, two films together, and they were always like some weird combo. I love that idea.
Yeah, that's where you got to take the red pill.
That's great. But anyway,
Do you want to get back on this? Because I had a kind of a counter to your argument, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure. Well, wait. Can I say one thing first? Let me just finish what I was trying to say. I'll do it in 10
seconds. Finish your thought, and then we'll have Brutus come in and with his question.
I'm not going to argue for it. I'm just going to say what it is. The two things that I think get you from Marxism to violence, the two things are the fact that human nature needs to change and that oppressor and oppressor oppressed. Those two elements together equal violence because human nature isn't changed. And as soon as you start oppressor oppressed, you got to find an oppressor. And they always do.
What does that have to do with Marxism? That just seems some broad statement about everything.
Well, oppressor oppressed is a Marxist concept. He mentions it in the first few paragraphs of the manifesto. It's a Hegelian concept that Marx adapted, but it's oppressor oppressed is pure Marxism. And,
I don't know anything about it, man.
Okay, well, that's on you. Just because I know more about Marxism than you do,
I completely agree. You and I are probably on the same team when you reduce it to philosophical principles. You're talking to a soldier here. Like,
By the way, that's WVU soldier. Go ahead, WVU soldier. You wanted to say something. Go for it.
Yeah. When it comes to the damn thing, you and I probably agree on the philosophical principles. As far as the actual practice of the thing, there is no doubt in my mind. There's physical evidence out there that there were Marxists in America doing exactly what you state at the time you state that they did. That's absolutely
true. Right.
There's also physical evidence out there to suggest that the FBI has done what the other side is saying. When you reduce it down to democracy or to capitalism versus Marxism or democracy versus sociology or whatever, you end up I think cheapening the argument just a little bit. When you look at what I want you to do is kind of just recognize what's happening in reality right now and why soldiers or why people are actually coming at it the way they are. So people do legitimately have a distrust or a distaste in the FBI for, if not actual instances of entrapment, perceived instances of entrapment. And why do they have that distrust? It's because of perceived and actual instances of abuse over time. And there have been a number of them. So while we can state that overall our principles, yours and mine, are the same, we have to at least not cheapen the argument to the overall principles and recognize the individual cases when they come about.
I think culturally people have been tricked, and I'm one of them. I'm one of the people who was tricked. Until I did the research myself and actually really, really drilled down into the research myself. For instance, if you'd asked me about Angela Davis a year ago, I would have said, I don't know. I don't think she probably did anything wrong. Now that I've looked into the case myself, deeply, in a way you can't do. If you just read other people's reports, I'm like, well, she should have gone to jail. She was there when the gun was bought. She bought the gun for George Jackson's brother. Now, that's a level of detail most people don't have. It's like, I'll put it like this. It's like Islam. A guy I know who's now an anti-Islam activist. He used to be a standard liberal guy. He, you know, coexists, right? We're being mean to Muslims. And he said, I didn't know much about Islam. I think most liberals, for instance, if you talk to them, they don't know anything about Islam. They really don't know about
the way
the religion works, right? So if you look into it, you'll find stuff in the religion that's like, you go like, well, that is really weird that they, so, you know, that is really strange. But you've got to look into it. So most people default culturally. This is why Andrew Breitbart used the term default cultural liberal. Most people, if you ask them about any number of stories, most people, if you ask them about the Steubenville rape case, perfect example, if they know anything about it, half of what they know is wrong. And
I mean, it's fair to a degree, right? It's fair to err to authority. For instance, on this particular case that you're bringing up, I have to err to your authority. I fully believe that you've vetted all of the research out there. I believe that you're talking about this instance in matter that is absolutely truthful. And anything you have to say about it, I would generally just assume to be true. I'm researching my own things. I'm an expert in other things.
Let me just mention this. So I write for Breitbart, and a lot of people dismiss Breitbart. But what I tell people all the time is take any article I write, click on the links. If you notice, anybody who reads my stuff and clicks on the links will see that I generally link to left-wing or mainstream media sources. So in other words, if there's a fact in a story that I'm linking to, and I have a choice between linking to the Daily Caller or the New York Times, I'll pick the New York Times. And the reason why is I don't want people to dismiss it and go, oh, well, it's a right-wing source linking to a right-wing source, and it's a big circle jerk, right?
Right. Well, you're absolutely the most credible Breitbart person out there.
I appreciate
your writing. Breitbart does have a reputation, and let that stand as it is. I don't want to digress too far away from the FBI subject to begin with. And I guess what I want out of you is an understanding that yes, while there was at least, I don't know if there is still today, and there may still be today, some sort of Marxist element that is trying to actively discriminate. No, there is actually. While there is an active Marxist element out there, however large or small it is, that is working to discredit the FBI and the federal government writ large, the FBI has done a fair bit to discredit themselves.
No, I actually don't agree. I think if you look at the facts, I hear what you're saying. I believe you believe that sincerely. And what I'm saying is when I started to research those cases, and don't forget, you got to remember, people like Lisa Fithian, for instance, well-known anarchist organizer, works for the union. She was involved in Occupy Wall Street. She was at the G20 battle for Seattle. Fithian's a woman who's in the – a guy. That sounds horribly homophobic. But Fithian was in the Informant movie, well-known person. She's a liar. I mean, she explicitly – went on Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! Afterwards, and after Brandon was outed, she said, oh, Brandon wasn't a founder of Common Ground in New Orleans. Well, that's just not, like, it's not remotely true, and she knows it's not true. And people corrected her. They were like, well, what are you saying? People who hated Brandon were like, well, he did co-found it. So there's the people who, a person like Fithian runs things. She's an organizer at Occupy Wall Street. Then there's the people who don't know any better, who kind of show up and they don't know what's going on, and it sounds reasonable to them. And again, I used to be on the left, so I get that. And I wasn't, you know, I get how people get tricked. But I tell you, I swear to God, the reason my politics changed is I started doing the research. And I was like, oh my God, these people are horrific liars. So, I mean, I would love to come on and talk to Vince sometime about the Oscar Grant thing. I think that's another perfect case of where the left is completely
lying.
Oh,
my God. Don't remind me. I have to – sorry to cut you off, Stranahan. We're running really short on time. But just to comment on that, and I'm going to get to a few more calls before we finish. But, yeah, that's another movie I still haven't seen yet. I feel guilty because, you know, it happened in my backyard. I went to protests about it. I followed the story, you know, and I'm definitely going to watch that film, and would love to do a powwow with you about it. As I want to do probably a full show on informant and just informants in general, I think that it's a topic that's got a lot of it crosses that intersection with like hacking, white hat, black hat, gray hat hacking. It's like the ethics of hacking. And I think there's certain ethics involved in informing for the government. I think there's plenty of cases you could find where it's been a positive thing. And I think there's other cases, obviously, where there's dubious results. And then I think there's cases that kind of are in a gray area. And I feel like this Darby case is kind of in that area. And I'm going to watch the end of the film, and then when I'm done, I want to do a full review of it. But yeah, I'm going to leave it at that. I got a shit ton more callers to get to. I'm going to bring on Gonzo now. What's up, Gonzo?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great, Gonzo. What's up? What'd you want? What's on your mind?
It's been an incredible 2 hours almost. So I just had a couple questions for Stranahan, and I figured I'd call and ask them. So, Lee, I just wanted to know, do you have an actual contract with Breitbart for journalism?
Let me ask you about your work. Why is it that
no,
you're
shut
fucking
up. No, Lee, fuck off and quit. Don't even start deferring. Answer the fucking question. Don't defer.
Oh, no, fuck you.
Answer the question. Do you have a contract with Breitbart News?
Why is
yes
this
or
any
no?
of your business? Why is this any of your business?
I think it's my business, Lee, because you're putting yourself out there as a public person. So answer the question, Lee.
I think it's
I don't think it's any of your business.
I think it's safe
yes,
to say
it's everybody's business, Lee.
Okay,
oh,
Gonzo.
Oh,
Gonzo.
Okay.
Do you have another question?
That's a normal question that any member of the public, especially somebody who's
okay.
being solicited for donations.
No, it doesn't.
You
guys are both. What you don't seem to understand, I know you're pissed off because you've been on hold a long time. I'm sorry. I lined up 5 guests to talk to, one of which barely has even fucking spoken a word, who's Caesar. If anything, I should give Caesar the next 10 minutes. Hey, Caesar, how you doing over there?
I'm good.
Hey, man, I'm really stoked that you called in. You called in from the East Coast, from Boston. You've been on the line longer than everybody, including Gonzo PhD, who's fucking peeing his pants because he's had to wait 2 hours so he could fucking verbally assault Stranahan for no goddamn reason. I hate it when people just go after people and discredit them. You can't even fucking defeat somebody on the premise or a debate at hand. You know, Gonzo's a smart guy. There's no reason why he can't run circles around Stranahan if he disagrees with him. But no, what does he choose to do? To jump in and attack him on his credibility, his loyalty to Breitbart or whatever, you know, his association. I mean, what the fuck do you want? He blogs for Breitbart. What do you want? Maybe he gets paid. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe he has a contract. Maybe not. Who gives a fuck? All right, let's fucking move on. If he's not going to answer the question, then fucking move on. Am I wrong, Caesar? Am I wrong?
Yeah, you're not wrong, but I think Stranahan has a very different agenda. He has his own definite agenda. He's very pro-government, pro-police.
That's weird, because he's actually a small government Republican. I think he wants, like, less of that. Well, I don't know. Stranahan, I'll let you speak for yourself.
Yeah, I'm a small government libertarian leaning, pro gay marriage, pro weed, conservative, sex positive conservative. The only reason the Gonzo thing pissed me off is obviously I work for Breitbart. The specifics of what I make, whether I have a contract, are just none of his business. And he's not asking like in an honest, nice way. Vince, if you ask me offline and we're just talking, I tell you, I don't care. But obviously, I work for Breitbart. I mean, duh, I work for Breitbart. And I've talked about why I've raised the funds independently. So let me be clear. The reason I raised it independently is because it's a huge story. I want to be able to release the information on a Creative Commons license. If someone else is paying the bill, they get to decide what happens with the material. They'd own the material. So I wanted to do something where I could interview people, go over there, interview people, and release the material so any blogger, whether it's liberal, conservative, any blogger in the world, could use the material, cut it into a – I'm going to literally release it under a full Creative Commons license so people can put it, cut it into a documentary. Anything they want to do with it, they'll do. So I couldn't do that if I went and I'd asked Breitbart for money. And there's lots of reasons to crowdsource a project. But just because I work for Breitbart, I've said I work for Breitbart. I've been 100% clear. I work for Breitbart. I'm a staff writer there. I get paid by them. Whether I'm under contract or not, whether I'm under blah, 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 nobody's any business, and it's completely irrelevant. But I've explained why I crowdsourced it, and there's nothing weird about it. Gonzo's a guy who's got a weird stalkery-like agenda against me, and since he's a pussy who won't even say his real name, I have no respect for the guy. Who is he? Where does he work?
Hey, can I interject here? I don't say my real name. Does that make me a pussy?
Well, no, because you don't have this aggressive thing against me.
Maybe I do. What is all this, you know, I like to have a nice discussion. Why has it always got to be about being better than the next guy? Why can't you just say something of substance here?
Let me tell you what you've been talking about. I don't know what this case is, but it's just like some guy who you want to be better than. No, it's not. Let me respond. Let me respond why I'm a little pissed off about this.
And this has been the theme all night. It's been some guy who you need to be better than.
No, it's not. I don't know where you're getting that from. I'm pissed off at Gonzo because he's part of a group of people who spent a year or so doxing me, attacking me, and furthermore, going after my wife and I had a daughter who died at birth, and they have made fun, and including today, they're going off on my daughter, going off my daughter being dead. And you know
why
what?
Why are they doing this to you? That sounds terrible, man.
Vince, am I making this shit up? You've seen it.
I'm not saying you're making it up. That just sounds terrible. Why would they ever do that to you?
It's
do you have any idea?
They don't like my politics.
Is that what politics is? Is being better than someone and being malicious towards them and being better than them?
I think we're in the green room.
Well, that's good.
No. Actually,
no.
Lee, I was in the green room with your buddy.
Okay.
And he says hi, by the way. Brandon says hi.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah, so he was going to call in and jump into the convo, but when he found out that we only have 2 minutes left, broadcast live, he's like, let's do it another time, and I was like, I'm not even ready to do it right now either. I'd like more time to do research and bullshit, too. Because I haven't even seen the film way through yet. But yeah, look out for that soon. Like when we can get it together, it sounds like he's down to come on and talk about
good,
the film.
Good.
And that gives me time to because there's like little clips here and there that I would love to talk about and go back and forth on. And I think it'll be a fun show.
That'd be good.
Cool. All right. Well, we got to sign off here. Let me go really quick to Anti-Crisis. Do you have any quick questions for anybody on the panel or anything you want to interject?
No, I'm good. Thanks. Thanks, Finn.
Okay. What about Vert? Vert, you've been waiting patiently. You're there. What's up? Do you have anything you want to add?
Oh, no. Good show. Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you. Gonzo PhD, any final thoughts, quickly?
Hey, that was awesome. Thanks, Vince. I appreciate me asking a simple question to Stranahan and then you giving him 5 minutes to just fucking smear me. That's really fucking impressive, Vince. Thanks. I'm certainly going to add lots of content to your fucking show in the near future after this kind of fucking stupidity. So, yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks. Smart. Wicked.
He hurt,
smart move.
He hurt your little feelings.
Stranahan, fuck you. Stranahan, go fuck yourself. You can't even answer a simple question, you fucking
retard. I answered it. It's none of your fucking business.
Yeah, a week ago, you were begging for money.
All right, dude. We're out of time. Kilgore, quickly, final thoughts.
By the way, I'm begging for money currently. If anyone wants to go to... It wasn't a week ago. I'm still begging for money.
right. Sorry.
Kilgore, quickly.
Those who do not dream are lost. Have nice dreams, everyone out there. Have nice dreams.
Oh, I will. I will. You're always such a soothing voice on the show. I love what you bring to the show. It's great. WVU Soldier, your final thoughts, please.
Hey, guys. Spend more time listening and less time yelling. The world will be easier.
Oh, God, yes. Thank you. Amen. Okay. Hatesec, final thoughts.
I don't know, man. I have nothing to say that hasn't already been said by Lee Stranahan. Have at it,
okay, but before Lee gets to it, Caesar, final thoughts.
Thanks for having me on, and Jews did 9/11.
Perfect. And last but not least, Lee Stranahan, final thoughts.
I love everybody. Brandon Darby,
right.
Call me.
All right, that's yeah, you got to take that call. I got to get out of here. Thank you so much, everybody. It was a great time tonight. I loved how it all came together, and hopefully we can all come together and sing Kumbaya together very, very soon. If you want to follow me on Twitter, please feel free to do so. It's twitter.com/VinceInTheBay. Hey, Caesar, what kind of music do you like?
Anything hip-hop, metal, anything in between.
Oh, how about hip-hop and metal together? Hello?
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Okay, you ever heard of Street Sweeper Social Club?
No.
Did you hear that song I played earlier? It was a Paper Planes MIA remix cover.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
All right, same band. This is Boots Riley of The Coup on vocals. He's a hip-hop guy. And Tom Morello of Rage Against the Machine on guitar. And this is kind of sort of like my quasi-unofficial theme for my Sunday night show, which I call Mega Show. And this song is called Mega Blast. Peace out.
Announce the world tour. You are hereby cordially invited.
Thank you, very nice.